welcome to a special edition of the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. I'm your host, JP Ajampaz. With me today, very special guest, the man behind the Attitude Era and former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, Vince Russo. Vince, welcome back. How you doing?
What is going on, John? Long time no see, man. How you doing, my friend?
Doing very, very good. So today, the topic at hand is WrestleMania 14, all the way back in 1998, just to kind of give you a little overview of it. So WrestleMania 14, March 29th, 1998, from Boston, Mass. At the Fleet Center, the attendance, 19,028 people, sellout, 730,000 buys, and the tagline is the greatest pay-per-view attraction of all time. 730, pretty damn good.
Yeah, no, that's a very good number, man. Multiply that by the price of the pay-per-view back then, and you got a pretty good payday, man.
Yeah. Think about this, though. WCW Uncensored was 2 weeks before this. You had Hogan versus Savage in the cage. You had Sting versus Scott Hall. Did 415,000 buys. So in the month of March, if you're a wrestling fan, over 1.1 million pay-per-views you bought. Nuts.
That's crazy, bro.
So did you think at this point, like, okay, like 415, obviously this is your WrestleMania, so you're going to do a better number. But did you think you were pulling ahead a little bit here? Because it seems like they're losing steam and you guys are picking up steam here.
Yeah, you know, bro, it's really funny because a lot of people got to understand pay-per-views were very expensive back then. Bro, a lot of people were on a budget and it was one or the other. Like, we can only afford one this month. I mean, that happened to a lot of people, bro. They couldn't afford to pay for both. So what happened was we started taking that pay-per-view audience away from WCW slowly but surely.
I know my dad would say you can only get one. So we would order the WCW and my friend would order WWF and we'd switch. We kind of go back and forth.
Absolutely. Yes.
And there would be a bunch of us too. So, I mean, we had a bunch of friends over there. So if you think about it, if all those kids were actually spending all that money in the pay-per-views, maybe one this month, God knows how many people were actually physically watching.
Exactly. Yep.
Crazy the popularity. And this is really the first big pay-per-view for you guys in like in a while, because Starrcade 97 does like 700,000 buys and you guys come back here WrestleMania 14 and do 730. So it's like, wow, you guys really are taking that audience. And Austin is skyrocketing. Mike Tyson is a huge help. Did it also help that Tyson loves wrestling?
Listen, man, I've worked around celebrities and I've worked around those that absolutely loved wrestling and those that didn't want to be there and it was a payday. I was there for both. So, yeah, bro, it really, really, really helps when the celebrity is into it. 1,000%.
With Tyson, the king of pay-per-views, what was Vince up to at this point with him? Because you always hear rumors that he was talking about being his manager and he wanted to do his pay-per-views and he was going to be the guy that was in charge of promoting his pay-per-views.
Nothing was ever said to me because, quite frankly, that was none of my business. So I never asked. But, bro, 1,000% that was the feeling that I had because Shane was always with Tyson. And bro, like even back then, I can remember, bro, Vince wants to take over this guy's career.
Because it's funny, it's like WCW, okay, they got Rodman. That got a ton of press. And like, wow, he's controversial. He skipped practice, all this stuff. But then you got Tyson, on the other hand, who's just as controversial, maybe even more popular. So it was like the perfect marriage. Like Rodman, okay, he likes wrestling. He'll miss Chicago Bulls practices and have to deal with the wrath of Jordan and Phil. And like Tyson over here, who just loves wrestling, he gets excited. And he can even tell Vince, even when he says Mike Tyson, he's like, I heard Mike. Like he gets so into it. Like you could tell Vince was definitely liking him more than just average run-of-the-mill celebrity.
Absolutely, bro. I definitely think Vince had some big plans and big ideas. I don't know what happened, obviously. You know, that was the thing, bro. Like, I didn't stick my nose in business where it didn't belong.
How was Mike and like backstage and stuff? Was he nice to everybody? And
Yeah, bro, he was great. The thing that blew me away though is, bro, he like had this entourage of a sea of people. Like literally, bro, you would see like 20 people coming and you knew Tyson was right in the middle of that. So he had an entourage of people, but not standoffish, no chip on his shoulder, really a down to earth, nice guy, very, very easy to work with.
Did that Entourage think it was a little bit of a shoot when Austin and Tyson, they had that awesome confrontation with Vince in the middle and Vince tries to back him up and they push each other? Did his Entourage think that was a little bit of a shoot?
You know, that's a great point, John. They may have. Either that or they just got carried away with the moment, you know. Yeah. But I think I remember that specifically, exactly what you're talking about.
That was such a good glimpse into Mr. McMahon, like the heel character, because he's like, yeah, you ruined it. Like, he's completely snapped.
When we had gotten Tyson, I guess talent relations, whether it was Pritchard or JR, they were instrumental in getting Tyson. Now Vince comes to creative, Mike Tyson, blah, 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 blah. Well, bro, they were all assuming that Mike Tyson was going to be a baby face in Austin's corner. And I was like, no, bro, like that's what everybody thinks. Go the other way. Let Tyson side with DX. Let him rip off the shirt. Set the stage that people are ready to pop and explode because Tyson's with Austin, and then pull the rug out from under them. Have him rip off the shirt. And that's what we wound up doing. But it's funny, bro. It's like, man, WWE, they always want to do the predictable thing. And like, that's what they're doing now again, 100% across the board. I was the opposite. I knew what the casual audience, what they were thinking. So thankfully, Vince listened. We went the other way, and I think it really worked.
Yeah, that public workout was great too. And they had to kind of set the stage and had that big press conference and stuff. It was funny because it's almost like Michaels is kind of in the background. It's almost like, yeah, Tyson versus Austin.
Was that the thought process?
Oh, absolutely, bro. Just letting the imagination run wild. Let's be honest, Mike Tyson would kill Steve Austin. But at that point, Austin was so hot. Like, bro, you literally believed Austin could take Tyson in a fight. So, yeah, bro, why not let people think about that?
What did Michaels think at this point? Because I know he's got the back injury. Does he like kind of maybe putting Tyson up on the pedestal? Or was he jealous, like a little bit, like, hey, this is me versus Austin?
Sean was all about money. There was such a back history of going into this WrestleMania that, like, I can really, really talk deeply about because I was smack in the middle of it and things that people don't even know about. But, bro, Sean was one of those guys. He sees Mike Tyson. He sees dollar signs. Mike Tyson is going to make me money. That's the old school way of thinking, bro, that doesn't exist today. So absolutely not. There was no ego whatsoever. Sean knew that Tyson was going to put a lot of attention on the match.
So what was like the deep stuff going on backstage with him and everything else?
Oh, bro, the deep stuff were Sean and Vince were at absolute odds. Absolute odds to the point of not speaking to one another. I was the guy, bro, relaying messages from Sean to Vince. Okay, Vince, from Vince back to Sean. I was right smack in the middle of it. And I remember, bro, it got to the point where it got so hot that he basically said to me, I mean, literally weeks before WrestleMania, you tell Vince McMahon if he wants his effing belt, then to bring his ass to my effing house in San Antonio and get it off my effing mantle himself. And bro, I had to go relay that message to Vince, and I relayed it in those exact words. But I got to tell you, bro, so it was very difficult. And Sean was very, very upset. And bro, I'll be honest with you. A lot of times when the angle was laid out on the Raws leading up to WrestleMania, bro, I'll be honest with you. It was Austin. It was me. It was Sean. It was Hunter. And it was China. And bro, I got to be honest with you. Hunter was the one that really stepped up. And Hunter was kind of the glue because Hunter and Sean were like this. And Hunter knew like Sean was about to freaking snap. So like Hunter went out of his way, bro, to make sure, okay, you know, everybody settled. This is what we're doing, making sure everybody was happy. Bro, if Hunter would have went the other way and stirred the shit, forget about it. But Hunter was really, okay, let's do this and blah, 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 blah. And he really, really took charge of the situation. And had he not, bro, I don't know how smoothly the match would have went off. Listen, bro, here's the bottom line. No matter how pissed off he was at Vince, he wasn't taking that out on Austin. The issue wasn't with Austin. I knew Sean was going to do business, but it was really, bro, just the headache in getting there.
Were you nervous at all, or was Vince nervous at all that he wasn't going to do it?
Number one, Sean had no issues, no heat with Steve Austin whatsoever. And bro, I'll be honest with you. I think Sean was smart enough to know, like, he wasn't going to F with Austin. I don't think Sean wanted to go down that road.
Is it true that Undertaker sat in gorilla position during the match in case anything happened with Michaels?
That I don't know, bro, because I wasn't sitting in gorilla position. Like, I was in the back working, but I wouldn't doubt it.
I could see, though, like, Michaels, because of last year, being a little worried. I could see Austin maybe being, like, in the back of his mind, like, maybe, is this guy going to do that again? Like, lose his smile?
Oh, absolutely, you know? Bro. I mean, we all know that a paranoia runs rampant. I'm sure they must have been thinking some of these things, but I never doubted it for a second.
With Austin, like, he's obviously the next star. He's the next guy. Like, you could see it from a mile away. You said, okay, this guy is it. Like, he's the guy. What is, like, your thought process with, like, okay, we got to book this guy like the next Hogan, but let's not totally dismantle Michaels as of yet. How do you kind of balance that creatively?
You're not going to dismantle Michaels. He's too talented. Sean is Sean, and Sean is going to keep himself over. I've worked with a lot of the greats. Bro, as far as all around, Sean was the absolute best. And because he was so good on the mic, in his character, in the ring, bro, he was bulletproof. You were never, ever going to hurt Shawn Michaels. You could have kept bringing Shawn back and back and back and back, and he would have been as strong as ever. So never, never had to worry about that, bro.
The thing with Michaels is he wasn't like a big draw.
I think, bro, that's because of where the business was at the time. Bro, you're talking about the guy's the champion, and you've got T.L. Hopper and the Goon and Freddie Joe Floyd and who? Like, oh, my God, bro. It was like he was carrying this thing on his back by himself. Huge, huge, huge difference, bro, in the supporting cast.
And Michaels was going up against the prime years of the NWO and Crow Sting and stuff. So not good competition for him to go up against.
Right,
and I know absolutely. Hall Nash or his boys, I know they would joke around with him saying like, oh, you know, maybe you miss us.
Absolutely.
So Austin, he's getting the big push. Is it crazy to think he's going to be the next Hogan? Because merch sales, arena sales, pay-per-view sales, like everything is through the roof. Licensing deals.
I don't know what Vince is thinking. All I know is, bro, I'm in a position now where I'm writing for a lot of people that are way, way over.
So as far as the actual show is concerned, the actual WrestleMania 14, when the pay-per-view starts, the Chris Warren Band, a.k.a. the DX Band, opens up the show. They do America the Beautiful and the Star Spangled Banner. Funny thing is, the video release and the WWE Network both cut this from the show, and the fans actually kind of booed them a little bit. Do you remember that at all? Like, thinking, like, that didn't really go off as well.
I wouldn't be involved in that at all. You know, like, at this point, I'm just backstage making sure everybody knows what they're doing. I'm so in the zone and entrenched in the show right now that, like, I didn't even know that till you just told me. So stuff like that, I got no idea about.
Funny though, like the Chris Warren Band, the guys that sing the DX song are doing the opening of the show. They usually do like a big celebrity. It's funny. And even in 98, you guys are so popular, but you almost like went against the grain. I just thought that was interesting. Maybe so much money was into Tyson. It's like, yeah, we can't really bring in another huge celebrity.
Possibly could have been the decision, bro. Absolutely. Yes.
I would just like laugh at them. Like, why those guys? Why not like Aretha Franklin?
I think that was my favorite entrance music of all time.
The DX song?
Yeah.
It is great. It's like perfect for them.
Yep.
You know, they say wrestling songs, you don't really listen to them like in your car or you're driving. Like that song you could actually like listen to when you're driving.
Absolutely.
It's actually pretty good. So the night begins with a tag team battle royal. It's interesting that LOD is like the surprise entrance, really, and they're kind of like the ultimate guys to have in the match, but they got a huge pop. So LOD coming back and really being LOD 2000, I thought it was great because it's like, oh, shit, LOD. Like, I don't know, it makes the match seem a little bit more heightened because they're the greatest tag team of all time. Then they have Sonny.
Bro, I'll be honest with you. Like, none of the participants involved like that. And when somebody doesn't like it, that's always the kiss of death. It's not going to work. By that time, LOD was a little further on in their career. So the idea of LOD 2000 was kind of to bring them in 1999, you know, whatever it was. And then Sunny, she was always ratings. So you were always trying to get her on TV, in the spotlight, in some way, shape, or form. But, bro, when you've got old school wrestlers like that, sometimes it's hard to change things up because their argument is always going to be, well, it worked for so long. And I agree 1,000%. But you don't want to get it to the point where a group like LOD like no longer means anything and just become two wrestlers on the card. To me, you never, ever wanted to get to that point. So you would try these different things to freshen it up a bit.
Other guys in the match were Barry Windham, the Jackal, Savio Vega, the Barriquas,
the Blackjacks,
DOA. The Godwins, the final team that got eliminated was the Midnight Express, Bombastic Bob and Bodacious Bart with Jim Cornette. That seems like not a great idea.
I was probably just throwing Jim Cornette a bone, pretty much.
Yeah, they're LOD 2000 here. They end up winning. They become the number one contenders for the WWF Tag Team Championship. But it's interesting. It's LOD 2000, it's like, I don't know if I really care for that name. It's like, you know, it didn't work for me.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Are they factored in as like, oh, we're going to do something with LOD here? Or they're just simply, we'll give them a nice little push?
Give them the WrestleMania moment. Let them win that match. But like I said, bro, because of Hawk's demons, I think that was really a let's play this by ear.
Good to start it off with the crowd because instant pop. As soon as you hit it, what a rush. Now, I know you don't agent the matches, right, to put it together, produce the actual matches, but who books the finishes of the match? Is that you and Pat and Vince?
We, as the writers, say what we need for the finish, but at that point, they book out the nuts and bolts of the match.
So the next match, Taka Michinoku defeats Aguila and retains his light heavyweight championship. Match only is about 6 minutes. What do you think here?
I hated it, bro, because it wasn't really character driven and storyline driven as much as I would have liked. And I was never a fan of it, bro, but I kind of inherited it. It started before I really started writing.
It's funny, the most memorable part of this match is JR's commentary saying that, hey, the last time Taka Michinoku defended the title was December 7th. Oddly enough, the same day as the Japanese bombing in Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, that would not fly today, bro.
No. But I just thought that was hilarious. Like, wow, that's the only like notable thing of match is him saying something funny.
Yeah,
and obviously today he would get in deep trouble. Back then we laughed and you know, there was nothing.
Yeah.
Today he'll forget about it.
Yeah.
So then the next matchup, Triple H defending the European Championship. He's with China. He defeats Owen Hart in about 11 minutes, 30 seconds. There's some chicanery going on with China and Sergeant Slaughter. I mean, there's all this other stuff. Triple H ends up getting the win here. Why not Owen winning here? Like, why did we go away from Owen after the Montreal Screwjob?
Because I think with everything that happened with the Montreal Screwjob, you had to bring Owen back with some kind of an edge. Like his brother was screwed in front of the entire world by the company he's working for. And bro, I'll be honest with you. you can't. It didn't work. That's not Owen. Owen is not a tough guy. Owen is not a kick-ass type of guy. Owen is not a serious guy. So when you were trying to bring him back and portray him in that light, it just really, really wasn't working. And then when you add to that, Sean being Sean would kind of just bury Owen on the microphone. So, bro, Owen being mad, upset, pissed off, edgy, it just was never going to work because that's no way how he was in real life.
So Mark Merrow and Sable defeat Goldust and Luna Vachon. Match goes about 9 minutes long. The thing I noticed here is Sable, and being 16 years old at this point, we're all obsessed with Sable, but she was so much more over than Merrow.
Oh, yeah. And, bro, way not more, only that, Luna hated Sable, and Mark had to protect Sable from Luna, but he didn't do it in a way where he was being disrespectful to Luna. She didn't hate Rena Mero. Rena Mero was a sweetheart of a person. She hated, oh my gosh, this beautiful woman who didn't know how to wrestle and learned how to wrestle in a couple of months. Luna hated the idea of that just because of what she represented.
I could see, though, Luna, who's like a trained wrestler, very, very serious. Yep. Her family's in the business. And then this, you know, hot blonde comes along. It's like, who the hell is this?
The way you describe Luna, like, you are dead on. She was so traditional. And now there was kind of a segue of these really, really attractive women making a name for themselves. And that caused a lot of issues. But she was totally a sweetheart, man. I mean, I loved Luna to death, but bro, she was very, very protective of the business.
Now, this is different, kind of what you're doing with the women here. Like, you're really putting some spotlight on them. They are getting this big time match in WrestleMania. But are you starting to sense, like, wow, Sable is like maybe number two popular behind Austin? Like, you
sense she was, bro. I'll never forget the day. I'll never forget it. Anybody can go back and see it. It was just a little spot where Sable came out and she was putting over this big inflatable chair, like a Shop Zone thing. Bro, the people went nuts. I was in the arena, and I swear to you, bro, she got the second biggest pop behind Austin. That was the second biggest pop of the night. And then I realized, bro, we got to do something more with her. So that's when I went to Vince. I'm like, Vince, I know she doesn't know how to wrestle. She's married to Mero. She's smart. Mero can train her. Put the belt on her because she would open up doors that some of the guys can't. So Vince said to me, call Mark and Rena and see if they'd be interested in doing that. And that's exactly what I did. I said, Rena, you're not going to believe this, but here's the idea. Mero trained her. I thought she did a phenomenal job for what she had to do. Bro, she's not going to go out there and give a Britt Baker match. I mean, that's not what it was about. But I thought Mark did a great job in training her. And I think it worked, bro.
Crazy how over she was. The next matchup, The Rock, who is the reigning Intercontinental Champion with D'Lo, Kama Mustafa, and Mark Henry, all of the Nation of Domination, defeat Ken Shamrock by disqualification in about 5 minutes. Interesting booking here because Shamrock wins. He gets Rock to tap out. Then they can't get him off of him. So all the security, everybody's trying to do that and get him peeled off the Rock. Then he beats up all the security and stuff. Then Howard Finkel gets on the mic and says, and the Intercontinental Champion still is The Rock. He wins by disqualification. Like, is that a little bait and switch there? Like, oh, we'll tease him with Shamrock winning, and then Rock gets his title back, gets a major heat?
Yeah, I think so, because that is so suitable for Shamrock's character. So it was 1,000% believable. And, bro, that's when characters really used to mean something, where you could pull that off, and being a hothead, it's what's keeping him from the title. He can't control himself. That's the story. But, bro, I want to say this, and I've said this a million times. The Shamrock was such an integral part in The Rock becoming The Rock. I honestly feel, bro, if there wasn't that Shamrock stepping stone, I don't know if The Rock would have became The Rock. I don't think Ken Shamrock gets enough credit for that, bro. He was so key to The Rock becoming The Rock and larger than life.
And to me, I was like, man, this guy is something. Like, you could just tell, like, he's grown. Like, he's the main event guy.
Absolutely, bro. Yep.
The next matchup, Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, a.k.a. Terry Funk, defeat the New Age Outlaws, Road Dogg, and Billy Gunn for the WWF Tag Team Championship in a dumpster match. The match goes about 10 minutes. This was really fun. I really enjoyed this match. It was great. And Funk in his element and Mick in his element. But it showed Road Dogg and Billy Gunn. Like, wow, these guys are tougher than you think. Whose idea was for Jack and Foley to win here, but then they lose the next night in the cage match to the Outlaws? Was that something where, like, it's really going to behoove them to lose and then get more over the next night when you guys reestablish DX?
Yeah, I think so, bro. And also to give Mick and Terry the WrestleMania pop. Yep. Give them that big night. They deserved it. Give it to them. But yeah, bro, it gets Road Dogg and Billy over even more that they came back the next night and won the titles.
Plus, they didn't technically get pinned or submitted. They closed the lid on them, so they kind of kept strong, right?
Exactly, yes. Yep.
The pre-match stuff with Pete Rose is hilarious, because who came up with that?
We're thinking about it, but like, nah, he ain't going to do it. Yeah. But bro, I swear to God, I'll never forget this. So we pitched him, and you know all he cared about was how much? What? I swear to God, bro, that's all he cares. Okay, yeah, I'll do that if it's worth my while. And whatever Vince agreed to pay him, I don't know. Bro, that's all he cared about. All he cared about was, I'll do whatever you want me to do, but you're going to have to pay me. And that's a businessman, bro. It was freaking awesome.
It's funny, too, because it's like, why Kane and Pete Rose? But it just worked for whatever reason.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So then Undertaker is up next, and he's going to defeat Kane with Paul Bearer in about 17 minutes. Good match here. So with this is very infancy of the streak, but he's got a little bit of a streak going here. Was there ever any thought of Kane going over here?
We had so many chapters in this story and so many things we were going to do with Paul Bearer and storytelling that I don't think there was, bro, because either way, it wasn't going to hurt Kane, because it's kind of like Jason coming back. There's going to be the next chapter in the story. So I don't think there was any question in putting Taker over here.
He kind of gets his heat back a little bit too at the end, because he beats him up afterwards and then Undertaker sits up. But it's just interesting, like Kane, it's like one of the first guys that I remember kicks out of the tombstone too. Yeah. So it's like you guys really made an effort of like, okay, we got to make him look as strong as possible.
Absolutely. And don't forget, Glenn Jacobs was such a sweetheart of a guy that Taker had no issues. He wanted to get the guy over, bro. So it really, really worked.
Plus, it helps him, too. Like, if I have somebody equal to me that I can work with, money, money, money.
That's exactly it, bro.
And Bearer did such a good job.
He doesn't get the credit, and I don't know why. The greatest storyteller of all time in the wrestling business. I was around for hundreds of his promo. Nobody's told the story better than he did. Nobody.
It's one of the best storylines, Kane versus Undertaker. Also, Austin versus Vince is going on. They're about to go on around the same time. So you get two really tremendous storylines. But it's funny, there's like the supernatural characters in the Attitude Era. Don't know why it worked, but it worked. And Bearer was so good, just egging on Taker, making fun of his mom. Like, so Kane's good. Your brother. Like, everything was so good.
Yeah, so good.
Then we get the main event of the evening. Stone Cold Steve Austin defeats Shawn Michaels for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship in 20 minutes. Mike Tyson, of course, is the special guest enforcer.
Bro, I swear to God, I'll never forget this. And I still don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. But, bro, he was selling the back big time before and after the match. Big time. He was selling the back. And I remember, bro, there was a spot in that match where Shawn did the kip up. And I was like, wait a minute. Like, you got to be freaking kidding me. Now, bro, I will say this. You know what adrenaline can do. No question about it. 16,000 people in a match of that magnitude. Shawn Michaels could not be feeling a thing. To this day, bro, I don't know. I don't know if he was working the back. I don't know if it was adrenaline. I don't know. But I remember after the match, he was down in the locker room. His parents were over him. You know, Shawn knew he was leaving after that. I can't see Shawn playing that up like that if it wasn't real. But yeah, bro, he was in a lot of pain after that match.
He's one of those guys, like a Bret Hart, where they're such like good workers and good sellers. You kind of can't tell because there's points of that match where I'm like, he's healthy. But then you watch, there was like where he held his back, was like gingerly walking. You could tell he tweaked something because he like had a little jolt. And like, okay, you're not going to do that like as a work. Like he's
exactly, bro. Legit. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
And you could tell when he goes to kick Austin, Austin has to get extra low when he misses. Yeah. You could tell it's one of those things where he's literally just lifting with all his abdominal muscle. Just trying to lift his leg over Austin.
Yeah, yeah.
He definitely had some back issues. I wonder what was going through Austin's mind. Did you know, like, was he like, I hope he's healthy enough?
Austin is the type of guy, bro, that he's fully aware and he's going to take care of him. If anybody knew how messed up he was, it was Austin because Shawn would let him know. I mean, absolutely. Especially after that Owen injury. Austin's going to go out of his way to take care of you if you're hurt, without a doubt.
Austin wins with the stunner. JR, most legendary thing. He's holding up the belt. The Austin era has begun. Austin. You know, speaking sound bites, the awesome JR-ism. Do you know, like, then they're like, okay, Rockstar, like, this is the guy.
Bro, I knew Rockstar when he said Austin 316. And that was his. Vince Russo take credit for everything. I wish I wrote that line. He was in such a groove. Bro, he wasn't going to be denied. Like, nothing was going to stop him. Nothing, bro. Like, I honestly believe, bro, even if I would have written shit TV, I don't think that would have stopped him. Somehow, some way, he would have gotten it over. This guy was so freaking determined, bro. He grabbed the brass ring. Nobody was going to take it away, bro, no matter what.
Tyson, obviously, post-match, reveals he's really buddies with Austin. He raised his hand. He counts to three very, very fast. Counts to three, by the way, which I've been told by Mike Chioda and a few other people. I think Jimmy Corderas might have mentioned it to me, too, that they taught him, like, one. Two, three, but he was so excited. He was right, one, two, three. Right.
Exactly. Yep.
So I meant, I was like, did Vince McMahon ever say, like, yeah, right? Vince is not going to tell him, like, you counted too fast. Like, he didn't care. Like, it just.
Bro, the whole thing was with that, because I guess this is originally why they wanted Tyson to be a babyface. Because the whole thing was, bro, if you remember at the time, he was banned from pay per view because he bit Evander Holyfield's ear. Part of Vince's pitch was, we're going to make you come out of this looking like a baby face. So I guess that's why Vince's plan was originally for him to be with Austin. And then, like I said, I threw in there, no, he needs to be with DX. But Vince wanted to make sure he left on a baby face note. And I think that was accomplished, bro. I think he did exactly that.
And then the great knockout punch to Michaels afterwards was great too.
Yes. Yeah.
Cementing it. And Michael Selovitz, funny too, because if you watch his mouth, he's like trying to fix his jaw.
Right.
Great selling. Yeah. It's great job. Yeah. So huge success. Like I said, 730,000 buys. Do you know, like, after the show's over, like, that was great?
When I say this, people think I'm full of shit, but it's the God honest truth. Bro, the WrestleManias that I worked, bro, it was just another show. Because the reason why I say that, bro, is we had to write live TV like every single day. So to us, WrestleMania is already over before it even goes out there. we're thinking about the show after WrestleMania. That's where our focus is, bro. What are we doing the night after? The Raw following is the most important show of the year, without a shadow of a doubt.
So give us a grade, WrestleMania 14, like A, B, like what would you grade it if you were grading the show looking back, WrestleMania 14?
I mean, I would like to think every show I was involved in was an A, but I would say it probably was an A because we got out of it exactly what we wanted and needed, and all the pieces were set in place going forward.
Yeah, me too. I love the show. Just looking back, even watching again, it's like, man, it's very rewatchable, which a lot of shows aren't, but I mean, that was a good one. Strong showing by LOD, kind of making their name again. Foley and Funk. DX is relevant. Austin, obviously, is the man. The only guy, really, is Michaels, has gone for a while, and we just don't know the status of the injury. The real big thing is Mr. McMahon, Austin, you guys are going to take it, that rocket ship to the moon.
Exactly. Yep.
All right, so let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. Vince, what do you got?
Yeah, guys, go check out channelattitude.com because all our shows are there and you get clips, man. You get previews of all the shows on the network and you could decide whether you want to subscribe or not. It's a great tool, bro. A lot of free material. Go to channelattitude.com.
New site looks great. Congrats on that. You guys got a lot of good stuff going on. But thank you to Vince and thank you everybody out there for listening. We'll see you next time. Have a good one, folks.
He's put everybody down with sweet chin music. And he has put Austin down before as well, as we know. Austin back up somehow. Uh-oh. Austin ducked it. Austin going for the stunner and Michaels counter. Michaels going for another kick. Austin, he got it. The stunner. Mike Tyson in. Austin at the champion. Stone Cold. Stone Cold. Stone Cold. Wait a minute. Tyson has double crossed the end. It's a double cross. And I don't think Shawn Michaels can believe what he's seeing. Mike Tyson waving a 316 in front of Michaels' face. Maybe this has been a setup all along. Michael said, no, Mike, you're supposed to be with me. Michael's insulting Tyson. Michael's standing up for the baddest man on the planet.
Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.